we're going to talk about the first round of the 2018 NFL draft. And we're going to begin with these skill players in it. We had five quarterbacks off the board in round one, including three running backs, two wide receivers, and a tight end. It's a pretty good haul for skill talent at this stage, and it was a talented skill class. It has a lot more left on the board that we're going to be seeing in the coming days. So let's begin with Baker Mayfield. Mayfield, first overall pick. I mean, I think a lot of people were kind of surprised about that at first if you're just new to this whole draft process. But if you followed the process, you know, from late fall through now, it makes sense why Mayfield is that pick. You know, you've got, for one, Todd Haley in this offense where he does a lot of West Coast looks. He's got some experience with some spread attacks. There's a lot of diversity in this run game. That sets up the play-action game very nicely. And Baker Mayfield is very good at the play-action game with quick-hitting passes where you can get your receivers to run after the catch. And with David Njoku, Duke Johnson, Corey Coleman, and Josh Gordon, you get that kind of run-after-the-catch ability that fits well with a quick-hitting passing game that plays it safe. Now, at the same time, you could look at Coleman and Gordon think, wow, they could have gone really vertical with their concepts and done a lot, but that doesn't help out the offensive line all that much. And while the offensive line is reputed to be a pretty good unit, at the same time, if your team's been getting down and getting behind early, you're taking those shots deep downfield isn't very helpful, and teams kind of know what to expect, and it puts a lot of pressure on your quarterback. And Baker Mayfield, I know a lot of people want to say he's the next Russell Wilson or the next Drew Brees, but I don't think he's as good of a downfield passer as either of those guys were in college. I think he's more of a Jeff Garcia-like talent. And a lot of people will find that off-putting. But when you think about the comparison, Garcia was a multi-year Pro Bowl player at the height of his career who played in a West Coast offense, a lot of short passes, can play pretty well in the intermediate game, and hit receivers downfield off that play action with movement. And Baker Mayfield does that extremely well. So if you fit the system to him and not ask him to throw the deep post downfield and make some of these pinpoint accurate deep power throws, you're going to be okay. If you ask him to, you know, throw more 50-50 balls or fade routes or routes that can be helped out by the position of the receiver, I think he can do that. When you watch him against tight man coverage with what I consider to be pinpoint level passing, a very, very high standard of that, where a guy actually catches the ball in stride, doesn't have to leave his feet to do so. He struggles a bit when it comes to that tight man-to-man coverage and with pressure in his face to have to deal with it. When it's time to reset and fire with accuracy, that's where he really struggles. And defenses are going to be able to keep him in the pocket more rather than allowing him to bounce outside and bust coverage up in the ways that he did in the Big 12. So I think Mayfield's a good quarterback, but I don't think he's that special player that they're trying to label as the next Russell Wilson or Drew Brees. Well, let's talk a little bit about Saquon Barkley as the number two pick overall. You know, I think a lot of people will probably say that's a slam dunk pick. How do you not take this back? He's so dynamic. And then you can take a look at somebody like Eric Stoner, my old buddy, who used to write for the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. And, you know, we talked after the draft, and he's like, you know, he reminds me of Reggie Bush. And I can see that. As a bigger Reggie Bush, one of the things that Barkley may be inclined to do is put too much pressure on himself to make the home run play. He already did that too often at Penn State. It was something I noticed a fair bit this fall, is that he likes to bounce plays outside or reverse field in situations where really the team needs him to just to take the hard yards. Sometimes those hard yards are a short loss or a very short gain just to keep the offense on schedule so the quarterback and play caller have more options to fool the defense, and that helps teams sustain drives. So, you know, if Barkley can't do that, he could wind up being a drive killer despite the fact that when you look at him on paper, paired up with Odell Beckham Jr., with Evan Ingram, Shepard, it's a really great makeup for this team to spread the field and do a lot of wonderful things where you can move Barkley and Beckham and Ingram around and force mismatches against linebackers and safeties, especially with Barkley and Ingram. And I think that they'll have a lot of success with that. And Barkley will certainly be a successful player. The question really isn't to me whether he's going to be successful. It's going to be, is he going to be an all-pro caliber producer at the level that's commensurate with that number two pick? Looking at Barkley just in terms of what he does for an offense, I think that, you know, with the cause and effect of how linebackers and safeties will have to play him to open up, you know, other mismatches for Beckham and Ingram and Shepard, it can be very helpful. But could you get that from another player? And the answer is likely yes. James White or Deion Lewis, to a degree, you can get those types of mismatches. It just depends on how good Barkley can be between the tackles. If he can give you both the receiving element and the rushing element to really force teams to honor what he does up the middle, then you might end up with a guy commensurate with that number two pick. But right now, too much tape from the college game that shows him bouncing things outside unnecessarily. So I'm a little concerned about it in terms of the overall value. But you know what? At the end of the day, and how we look at the NFL draft, I'm kind of more about getting your talent and who you believe in. And if that talent is strong enough to sustain you for, you know, 3 to 5 years of strong production, I think you can tend to say that you've been successful. And it's a lowered expectation than I'd like it to be, but that's kind of just the reality. So when I look at it from that standpoint, I don't hate the pick, but I think the Giants could have improved their team with a better offensive line and then picked one of the other backs that were available. So that's where I am with Barkley. Now we move on to Sam Darnold. Now when you look at the Jets and their situation, they're loaded with quarterbacks. I can't say they're loaded with quarterback talent at this stage, but Darnold certainly gives them talent. Now it's a matter of refining it. He's probably not going to play this year. So that gives him a fighting chance to be able to sit behind Josh McCown, maybe Teddy Bridgewater if Bridgewater isn't traded, and you get a chance to let him learn the system and to develop good habits, and especially with his footwork, and improve that. And if he can do that, there is some budding talent on that Jets defense, on that Jets team, for him to be able to lead a team. And I like his potential. The big question is, again, whether a team can develop him to the point where he's going to make good play calls, because I'm not worried about the mechanical part. I'm not worried about his accuracy. I'm worried about him reading the field, reading defenses, especially at the linebacker and safety level, and understanding where those drops are going to be and where the pressure is going to come from, and being able to process it fast enough to find the easy answers. He often finds the hard answers and accomplishes those hard answers. But it's the easy answers that sustain drives and keep you in good down and distance situations to score points drive after drive after drive. That brings us to Josh Allen with the Buffalo Bills. Okay, so, you know, I gave a pretty balanced analysis of Josh Allen for a half hour just devoted to him in an RSP film room. And I understand what the old school NFL evaluator or GM sees in him. Big, strong, shakes off defenders, throws his way out of trouble with power, and doing it so on the move. But he's not an intuitive quarterback. He can't avoid pressure, reset, and fire on a consistent enough basis unless he's running away from pressure and either throwing on the move, rolling out, or climbing and kind of running towards it. He's not in control with his feet as much as he should be. There's a couple of plays you can find, but it's more cherry-picked. More often than not, you're going to see him making mistakes in terms of just seeing what's available to him early on in a play and delivering it quickly. He doesn't process information fast enough and spot that easy opening. And he ends up compounding his mistakes because of the fact that he goes away from the easiest solution. And you can't do that when you're in the red zone or you're in field goal range or it's third down or when you have defenders who are just as athletic, if not more than you, and you're trying to reverse your field after running from, you know, one hash to the far sideline and then back to the far hash again. This isn't NFL caliber intelligence in terms of on the field. He may have, you know, your Wonderlic intelligence, but he doesn't have that on-field football intelligence of processing all the information together. It just doesn't fire and connect that way for him at this stage. And Buffalo's lost three offensive linemen during this period, and they really haven't replaced them with anybody good enough to feel confident about what Allen's going to do if he starts week one or if he starts any time during the season, because he already freaks out at the flash of pressure. And I don't mean freak out in the way that Blaine Gabbert did, but what ends up happening with him is that he sees that flash and he ends up going away from easy solutions. And that's going to be a problem in the NFL if he doesn't fix that immediately. And I don't really see how that's an easily fixable thing. I think that's one of the toughest things to fix. So he's really a great example of how the old school NFL values the simple things that are easy to fix, but they undervalue the difficult things that are hard to teach. And I think that we're going to see that in great relief with Allen if he doesn't prove that those moments that I think are cherry-picked are actually more frequent than what I believe. Now that brings us to Josh Rosen, the Arizona Cardinals. The Cardinals traded up, and intelligently so, if you ask me. It's a great fit for Rosen because he's going to be with Mike McCoy. And as, you know, Matt Bitonti said in our Football Guys podcast during the draft, you have one, or it was Mark Schofield, I think, who said it actually, who was our guest from Inside the Pylon. You've got Mike McCoy, who's been blamed for having an offense that's too complicated. You've had Josh Rosen, who's been inexplicably labeled as too smart, and you're going to put them together. That means that they should be a really strong match because you've got two guys who really love football, really like to dive deep into offensive scheme, and they're both capable of feeding the other and executing what the other brings out there. So this, in theory, could be really a fantastic match. On top of it, I like the fact that Sam Bradford's sitting there as the incumbent quarterback. You got Mike Glennon there as well. So there's no pressure for Rosen to start right away. Bradford and Rosen have a lot of similarities in the fact that they're both very good vertical throwers. They're excellent in the intermediate range of the field. Neither of them are tremendously athletic, but they're good enough to maneuver away from pressure, reset, and fire. They're both technically sound quarterbacks who are intelligent and have pinpoint accuracy in areas of the game that are difficult to teach. So this is a very good mentor-mentee relationship with a team that also includes a Hall of Fame receiver in Larry Fitzgerald and an all-pro back in David Johnson. So as long as Josh Rosen, you know, can grow with this team, and I think he will, and they don't have a changeover with the coaching staff, and you can build, you know, you can acquire more receiving talent, which I expect them to do in the, you know, succeeding rounds of this draft, you're going to see Rosen in a situation where he's going to grow with young talent. He's going to learn from old talent. And I think he's in the best possible situation among these starting quarterbacks right now. You're going to hear more from Mayfield early. You're probably going to hear more from Allen early. And then Darnold's going to be the guy that's going to probably be more favored early on because he might have more surrounding talent around him. But I think Rosen's the guy that when you look at this team, he's going to wind up probably with the best learning experience overall. So I absolutely love this choice, and I'm excited about seeing how this is going to develop. Now, after Rosen, the Panthers went with DJ Moore. And as I mentioned on the podcast last night, North Turner worked out DJ Moore, and North Turner being the offensive coordinator in this team, he's very much a stickler for his receivers running the full route tree. DJ Moore must have impressed him enough that he gave his stamp of approval for Moore as that first round pick. And when you think about Moore's game, he's very good at dropping his weight so that he can stop fast. And that's one of the most important things about receiving, is that it's not so much about running fast, but it's stopping fast. And the way that you do that with is precise footwork, and again, dropping those hips, bending the knees deep so that you can come to a sudden stop. And Moore does that as well as any receiver in this class. He comes back to the ball really well. He attacks the football with his hands, and he's excellent after the catch. He's got a great first step. He's strong. He has great balance in terms of bouncing off direct and indirect contact at, you know, the hips, the thighs, the knees, and the lower leg. He's a strong cat. And when you look at Moore, the only issue that I think he really has that he'll have to develop at some point is winning press coverage and playing outside on a consistent basis where he can be a fade route runner. He's very good at the, you know, the comeback, the out, the slant, the dig route, crossing routes, hook routes, curls. Those are all good. But that fade route, that big money route that you want to see, well, right now they've got Funchess to be that guy. They've got Olsen to be that guy. But eventually you want more, ideally you'd like more to be that all-around player. And as Steve Smith said, this is their best chance of replacing him that he's seen since he left the Panthers a number of years ago. And I can see that. This is a really rugged, physical receiver who I think could be absolutely one of the best in this class. And by a large margin, if he develops that fade route game, and it's just going to take him learning the variety of footwork and handwork moves to use in conjunction, studying cornerback movement and placement and alignment, and developing a sense for what moves to use when and how to set them up so that then he can maximize that athletic ability that he has to outleap players. But in order to outleap players, you generally need to establish great position first. But once he does that, you will have an all-pro player. And then we go to the Ravens. And the Ravens picked Hayden Hurst. And I know a lot of people don't like Hurst's age. They wondered why they traded up to get a tight end. And when you look at Hurst, he's certainly athletic enough. I can see how he might even remind them a little bit of what they imagine from Max Williams. And he's quick enough to be able to get yards after the catch. He's agile. He has a good feel for traffic. I like the way that he catches the ball and he can take contact doing so. Is the age really that important? I'd say if they expect Hayden Hurst to make an impact from day one, being 25 years old isn't a big deal, because you're going to get that production right away. But that's a tough call to make about a tight end, because they usually have to be really strong blockers to make an impact right away. And that's a hard transition to expect from any, you know, college prospect at this stage. Unless they use him as a second tight end and as a specialist that they can split outside due to his size, and they're not going to count on him as much as a blocker, kind of the way Hunter Henry was used in San Diego, Hurst might be helpful as a red zone player in certain sub packages, but I don't expect him to play right away as an every down player. So as long as he is productive no later than year two, it will be a successful pick. Calvin Ridley. I personally love this pick because, as you know, I watch the Falcons every week for football, guys. And when you look at this offense, everyone loves to talk about Julio Jones. But if you ask me, the player who stirred this offense's drink for years was not Julio Jones, but Roddy White. Roddy White could run every route on the route tree. And if you double covered him, bracketed him, put an elite cornerback on him, he could still beat any of that type of coverage with Matt Ryan. They were so locked in. You often saw 3rd and 12s, 3rd and 14s, 2nd and 15s, and they would run comebacks, deep outs, dig routes, you name it, and they would have coverage plastered on him. and it was automatic. They'd get the first down. And that's not something that you get with Julio Jones. Julio Jones is a physical wonder. He's a rebounder. He runs good routes. He runs very good routes. But his routes are more, are less on the level of that kind of timing. He's more of the perimeter guy who runs slants, you know, who can run fades, slants, crossing routes, and certain types of routes where he's not being asked all the time to drop his weight unless it's a double move. So they're not as quick hitting. They're slower. They're either extremely quick hitting that uses athletic ability, or they're slower developing that tell a story. And I think Roddy White was that guy who kind of was in between that. Calvin Ridley is a storyteller, as a route runner. He has excellent skill off the line of scrimmage. He understands how to drop that weight. He's efficient. He's extremely sudden when it comes to, you know, getting in and out of breaks. And he's a reliable catcher of the football. Now, he's not a guy who's going to, you know, win the ball in the air like Jones. He's not going to make some of the tough plays where he's going to take a hit that he knows that's coming. But he's a guy that, like White, on 3rd and 12, he's going to develop to the point where he and Ryan can be so automatic with their timing that it doesn't matter what the coverage looks like. He's going to get that sliver of an opening and make the play. And that helps because Mohamed Sanu doesn't do that extremely well. You don't have that trust with Austin Hooper yet at tight end. You don't get that. You didn't get that from Taylor Gabriel last year. And, you know, some of this can be pinned on, you know, Steve Sarkisian and how he used his players. But at the same time, this component of the full, well-rounded route runner has been missing from the Falcons since White started getting injured and wasn't himself. And they needed that. So I think it's a terrific pick. It takes pressure off Jones. It helps Matt Ryan because that's the type of player he needs more than anything to really make this offense hum. Now, going from a pick that I think was excellent to one that I know a lot of people love, but I think is inexplicable, is Rashad Penny. I'm a Seahawks fan. I've been one for a while now since, you know, Marshawn Lynch was traded to the Seahawks. And this one really surprised me. I know my buddy Emery Hunt had him as his number two back. And I appreciate Penny's game. When you look at San Diego State, they run a lot of gap plays. You know, these are trap plays, power, counter plays. And those are pro-style, old-school, power football types of plays. And as Matt Batanti said in our podcast with the football guys, that, you know, DJ Fluker is that kind of blocker. But they need more players who are going to play in that type of a system. And they're converting from zone to gap. So if they're going to do that, it's a good fit for Penny in that regard because he's excelled in those gap-style runs. But let's think about running as a whole. Just because he was really strong at gap running, he was doing that at San Diego State that cleared a lot of big creases for him, or small enough creases or big enough creases that he could squeeze through with his burst and get into the open field. It's going to change a little bit in Seattle, and the creases aren't always going to be as reliable, and I would say they'd be far less reliable with the state of the offensive line for the Seahawks at this stage. They're going to really need to have a massive turnaround finally with this line, which is something they've been struggling to achieve for the past 3 to 4 years. And if they continue to struggle, as good as Rashad Penny's yards after contact looks in terms of that metric, let's remember that yards after contact is not a great stat, if you ask me. Because if a guy just brushes against, if a defender brushes against Penny's leg or knee, or just gets a swipe or a swat and doesn't really even wrap, that still counts as yards after contact. So all those long runs that Penny has, you know, where he rarely got contacted enough to really make a difference, that's still charted as yards after contact, and that inflates his score. What I'd rather see, and as I've talked about on Twitter, is I'd like to see yards through contact. That's what I want to see measured. And to me, that would be if a defender actually has wrapped or delivered a hard enough hit to at least temporarily stop the momentum of the runner and see how the runner and then measure how many yards he gets off of that type of contact. To me, yards through contact is a more telling stat and doesn't artificially inflate the number based on a guy's breakaway ability. And when you look at Rashad Penny, he doesn't break a lot of tackles in terms of when he's wrapped or really hit hard. He's got good size to do so, but I didn't see that out of him. He's an excellent receiver. That's going to be a positive, especially with the Seahawks. But, you know, this, again, looks like C.J. Procise with better vision and understanding of blocking schemes as he entered the NFL. The difference is that Procise broke more tackles, and Procise, I think, was a better pass protector. Rashad Penny, to me, struggled as a pass protector. And while maybe the Seahawks don't value that as much because they've got Russell Wilson, you're kind of leaning on that a little too much, in my opinion. If you're not going to lean on having a running back who can actually pass protect. And if you need one to, that means they're going to, what, bring Mike Davis in? They're going to bring another back in? Suddenly your offense becomes predictable if Rashad Penny is only in on certain types of sets. So I'm not a big fan of that. I would have rather seen them go offensive line here, but it's still early. We'll, you know, as with all these picks, we'll see what the full shape of the draft looks like, and then we'll talk about that a little bit more in the next week. All right, so let's take a look at Sony Michel. And I think this was a really strong pick for the Patriots. There are a number of backs that I might have picked ahead of Michel in terms of talent, but in terms of fit, Michel is an extremely smart football player who pass protects as well as any back in this class. He and Barkley are probably 1-2, and I would say that Michel is the top guy. On top of that, you have someone who catches the ball well, especially on screens and in the flats. He basically eliminates the Patriots' need to segment its running game if he plays to the level that he's capable of. He's got great speed and acceleration. He understands how to anticipate interior creases opening up based on run blocking, and Georgia runs a variety of gap and zone plays, so he understands the approach that it takes to run both styles of blocking, and that's an underrated skill because you're going to find a lot of guys who are only comfortable with one style. I would argue that Rashad Penny's more comfortable with gap than he is in zone. And there's some guys where you see who aren't comfortable with one or the other at all, and that can really limit them. Michelle's equally comfortable with both, and the fact that he can pass pro and that he can catch the ball well, this is a guy that should come in and take over this job. The only issue, fumbles. This is a guy that fumbles the ball at too high of a rate per touch, and it's something that put him in what I would call my reserve tier for that particular skill set. Now, Alvin Kamara improved in that level, in that area last year. He also improved with, you know, keeping plays between the tackles and not trying to bounce too many things outside. So there's hope for Michelle as a ball carrier to improve that over the summer. And if he does, he may not look back with this job. It just depends on how much confidence the Patriots want to give him. And I think that if he proves early on that he's the pass protector I've seen on film, it'll happen early. So I love the pick. All right, so let's talk about Lamar Jackson. This is one of my favorite picks and one of my least favorite picks all at the same time, because I was a Cleveland Browns fan. Ozzie Newsome was my favorite player growing up. And as you can see how that's unfolded with Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, that defense, those Super Bowls after they left Cleveland, all at the hand of Ozzie Newsome. It's a bittersweet thing to watch. And here's another one where they have Lamar Jackson, you know, at the 32nd pick when they could have probably taken him at the 25th pick. Well, why did they do that? I think the reason they did that is that Ozzie Newsome has worked in the NFL culture long enough to know that the optics on Lamar Jackson weren't going to be strong enough for any teams to feel comfortable picking him. I'm not saying that's right. I'm saying that's just how it was. That these, let's just put it this way, the rich white owners, he knew them. He works with some of them. He's seen how they operate. And he probably knew, look, I know I'm going to be able to get this guy with my second pick. I'm going to be able to just wait because I know how these owners operate and how they see things. And I'm going to use that to my advantage. And I think that he did. And when you look at Lamar Jackson's skill set, it's fantastic. And it's not the running. It's the pocket play. It's the fact that he can slide away from pressure, reset his feet, fire the ball accurately, that he does it without panicking, that he keeps his eyes downfield, that he has those quiet feet in doing it so it's not sudden, crazy, dramatic movements that take him away from the timing of the correct progressions. So he's able to go through his progressions smoothly and make the easy plays. Now, the accuracy is going to have to improve, and part of that is just that because his base is so narrow, he's inaccurate either to the left or to the right of the receiver too often because his delivery puts him off balance on a horizontal continuum. And I think that that's something that can be fixed. It's easier to fix that than it is to try and fix a player's ability to process information as he's in danger and has to avoid danger and reset and fire and do that while reading progressions and baiting safeties. He does all that extremely well. That's the hardest thing to teach. And he does it with real confidence and good timing. So the toughest issues he knows how to do. It's the easy things that he has to just get better at with more and more drilling and work. Jackson's going to get an opportunity to shine here. He's going to get a chance to develop, you know, behind Flacco. He's going to get a chance to learn the verbiage of the West Coast offense. He'll get a chance to refine his footwork and actually tie all of his footwork to the routes as opposed to just ones from under center. And that's something that he's got to get better at. His footwork, when it's 3 and 5 step drops, is terrific, and he's very accurate. When he has to work from spread, his footwork falters because he doesn't seem to have a plan. I think this is going to be a very supportive organization for him. I also think that he's going to learn fast, and you're going to see this guy develop into a dynamic player, a dynamic passer in the pocket who can also run. And I don't think that I'm hoping that the Ravens don't use him as a caricature of what he really is. All he needs is that opportunity to play in an offense that is going to encourage that more and more. That's it for this week. You can check out more of my work, beginning with my YouTube channel, the RSP Film Room. You can also find me on Twitter at Matt Waldman. And check out my site for more in-depth work at www.mattwaldmanrsp.com. Later.